Really, I'm going to deal with some very basic things to some degree, and I'll share with you from the outset that I really don't claim to be. I was surprised to some degree when I was asked to do this seminar, but as I began to look back over my ministry over the last 6 or 8 years, I've become more and more aware that really my concentration has been in the college area, even though it hasn't been by choice a lot of times. Basically, what's happened in my life is that back when I was in college, I ran into the Navigators as I was just getting out of high school, actually. So I worked with the Navigator ministry for about 3.5 years while I was in college, and then I ran into the St. Clair's one summer, and Barry challenged me with some new thoughts and new opportunities for discipleship within the local church, and that's how I got involved with Reach Out. Then as I was getting out of college, and since God's leadership had been going into Reach Out, I went to Winter Park and worked under Steve Cloud for a year. And as it turned out there, I was given the responsibility for the college ministry. So I worked with college students again for a year. And after I finished up that year, went in following a call to a church in Lakeland, Florida, and responsible for the entire youth ministry, but my concentration really has been with college and with high school students. And just because of the situation when I got to Lakeland, there's a small Methodist school there called Florida Southern. And as I came to Lakeland, as far as I knew at that time, there was no real evangelical voice on campus. And I was contacted and asked to be the volunteer BCM director on that campus. And I really struggled with that, frankly, for a while. I knew that would mean certain organizational and administrative tie-downs to some degree, that I wouldn't have maybe the full freedom that I would want to have in some ways. But the more I looked at it, I began to sense that that would give me more of an opportunity for a ministry on the campus, and we'll discuss why, at least in my situation, that was the case. So let me just start with some real basic things that I think are important. I shared those previous 8 years with you to tell you this, that I'm not an expert. I don't have all the answers. You're going to find that out very soon. But I hope that as a result of a lot of the various ministries I've been associated with and some of the mistakes that I've made, as well as some of the things that I've seen that I felt like have been effective, that maybe you can at least glean some things that would be applicable possibly in your own situation. First thing that I really think we have to begin with is two things really we have to begin with. First of all, it begins with motive. I think, frankly, we have to ask ourselves, why are we seeking to minister? This, of course, doesn't apply just to a college ministry. Any ministry we're engaging in. What's my motive for wanting to have a ministry to college students? Being honest with you, I struggle with purity of motives. You know, frankly, I find that my motives are not nearly what I would like them to be sometimes in my ministry to people. Sometimes I get caught up in wanting to be impressive to other people. Sometimes I am really concerned about how I'm coming across compared to other people. And there's a motivational struggles that I have within my life. So a question that I'd ask you that I need to consistently ask myself is, what is your motive in working with college students? Is there a basic motive just to have a ministry to college students? Or is there a motive to build a large college department within your church? Or is there any other motive involved? What's your real motive in working with college kids? Why is it that you want to be on campus? Is it to draw people to your church, or is it to have a ministry to students regardless of where they go to church? Would you be content to have a meaningful ministry in the lives of college students if none of them came to your church? If they all chose to go to church elsewhere, would you continue to seek to have a ministry for the glory of God and for the sake of the kingdom of God in those people's lives? Now, I realize that this is a very basic question that most of us have to face before in the past. And yet, I think in a fresh way, it's a question we need to ask ourselves. It's a very foundational point. The second thing I think we have to deal with, again, is a foundational point, and that is this. Is it God's will for me to engage in this type of ministry? Is it God's will for me to be involved in a ministry to college students or any particular ministry that I'm getting involved in? I think Ralph and Miles and others have really touched on this point to some degree already, but I'd like you to look at a passage with me, or actually just a verse, in John chapter 5, that very frankly has begun a revolution within my own life that has not ceased yet, and I'm convinced it'll continue to have a ministry in my life. John chapter 5, verse 19. Jesus says something here that I'm sure I've read many, many times before. John's one of the favorite, or is my favorite, I guess, book in the entire scripture. But Jesus makes a comment here that I feel like I was blinded to for a long, long time. And gradually God has made this thing come alive to me. John chapter 5, verse 19. Jesus therefore answered and was saying to them, "Truly, truly, I say to you, the Son can do nothing of Himself unless it is something He sees the Father doing. For whatever the Father does, these things the Son also does in like manner." Now, I don't know exactly what that says to you. It used to say a lot of different things to me, but God really drove this passage home to my heart one day as I was looking over just a few months ago. And I began to realize that I think what Jesus was really saying there is that I determine what God is doing, the direction that God is moving in, what God is trying to accomplish, and then I fall in line behind God and I follow Him. I do the things that I see Him doing. I fall in line behind God wherever He's going. And frequently, I think my perspective toward ministry has been, well, Lord, you know, there are people over here with needs. You know, there's some college students out there that need to be ministered to. I'm just going to go out and have a ministry. So I just blast that and take off. And then along the line, I'll stop off to the side and say, well, Lord, I'm out here ministering. I'm out here pouring into time. I'm out here giving myself. You know, bless what's going on. Bless what's happening here. But I haven't really taken the time to stop and, first of all, to find out if it's part of God's will for my life to be involved with that group of people. And then secondly, once I'm sure of that, what specifically is God trying to do? What does God want to do with that group of people? You know, how does God want to penetrate that campus? And one of the difficulties that we get in is we sap off of other programs. You know, it's so interesting to me, and we all do this, and this is good to a certain level, to a certain degree, but whenever we get together in conferences, we're always asking, you know, how are you doing this? How is it that this is happening within your church? And that's good. We can develop some creativity and draw from other people's ideas, but it is a real mistake for us to seek to copy, obviously, what other people are doing. And this is one thing I want to share with you tonight. I'm going to be sharing some specific things that I have done in the past that have not worked and some that have worked. But I think you need to be extremely careful in saying, just because you hear something tonight that sounds good, that sounds like it would work in your situation, don't go back and try to plug it in just because it sounds good and just because it's worked somewhere. God has an individual will for your specific situation with the particular group of people you're working with. And what you need to do is read John 5:19 a couple of times and spend enough time on your knees to let God let you know where He's headed and then fall in line behind Him. He may tell you to use exactly some of the things we talk about tonight. He may give you brand new concepts and ideas that no one has ever used before. But the important thing is that you're following Him in whatever you're doing. Okay, good. I'm going to deal with a couple of things that I consider problem areas when you're talking about having a ministry. And I'm specifically talking here about having a ministry on a campus. I hope that's why you've come. I take it most of you have campuses nearby where you're ministering or at least are working with students who are on campuses nearby that you're working with. And I think it's important for us to look at some of the problems of campus ministry, of collegiate ministry. The first is campus representation. Most campuses require that you represent someone or something other than a church for you to actually come onto campus and have a formal ministry. Now, there are obvious reasons for that. They're not interested in having 50 churches in a community trying to have independent ministries on their campus. That would be chaotic for them and extremely divisive in a lot of ways to the campus. And for the chaplain or for the person that's in charge of that on campus, it would be an administrative nightmare. They're not interested in that. So one of the problems is determining how I'm going to have a representation on campus. Now that doesn't mean that for you to have any contact or impact at all on the campus, you have got to work through an organization. But it does mean that if you want to have an organized ministry on the context of campus itself, it probably is going to have to be in an organized fashion through a sponsoring group. The obvious group on most campuses of any size is the Baptist Campus Ministry or the Baptist Student Union, but there are other options. This is something I had to face when I got to Lakeland. I got there and you know, we began to have a ministry on campus just through some interested students who were there. And things began to come to a head because I very quickly found out that I had to have a representation of some sort. But because we were working with a group of interdenominational students, we did have the option of initiating a new campus organization that had no denominational sponsorship. In other words, we could have just, because we had a core of students who were committed to what we were doing, we could have simply gone to the administrator on campus and maybe taking some students with me and shared with him that we wanted to set up an organization on campus that would meet some spiritual needs that weren't being met by other organizations on campus. Named ourselves the Agape Ministry or whatever we might want to call ourselves. Come up with a set of bylaws and turn those in. They file them away and never look at them again in their files. And we have an official sponsorship after we've got a teacher who'll be willing to work with us. And that basically is the procedure that most campuses go through. That's how Campus Crusade and Navigators and University pop up within campuses. So there are other options. You don't have to stick to a denominational guideline. But sometimes, if there's a small campus close to where you are, it may be of advantage to simply volunteer as the volunteer BCM director. It gives you an automatic status on campus. It opens up campus facilities to you. You're able to meet on campus facilities. They simply approve the meeting rooms for you in buildings. Whereas just coming on as John Doe from Southside Baptist Church, you know, they have no responsibility to you. But if you're in an organized fashion on campus, that does open up some more avenues to you. Second thing that's a problem here are conflicts with existing organizations. I think the first thing is to make sure that what you're seeking to do on campus really is God's will. We have a tendency sometimes to figure that just because we feel like we've got something to offer, it's automatically God's will for me to be there, and sometimes it can be a detriment to what God's already doing on campus. One of the real problems today on campus is the division that exists between the Christian groups on campus. There's a competition, there's a jealousy for the same people, when in reality there needs to be a unity. So I think the main thing in conflicts is making sure that what you're doing is within the will of God. If it is, you have the freedom to move ahead, even though there may be some conflicts with other groups on campus. But I think it's important that you're sure that that's really God's will in terms of your coming onto campus in an organized way. Example of that, I was really saddened to hear about this. A man that used to be the Minister of Education at our church resigned several months ago and has not secured another position at this point, but was interviewed by a new ministry called, I believe it's called the International Student Movement. It's a ministry that some men in the Navigators and InterVarsity and several international mission-minded, international student mission-minded groups have kind of pulled together. And what's taking place at this point is they have a beautiful vision. Oh, it's exciting. They have the vision that since most of the foreign students who are sent over to the United States are the top-notch students intellectually and the top-notch students status-wise within their countries, the top-notch students financially from their countries, they're concentrating, they have a vision to concentrate in on these international students, develop relationships, go with them to ball games on the campus that they're at, gradually work into sharing situations, personal friendship evangelism, hopefully leading them to Christ and discipling them, and as they go back to their country, they not only go back with the academic insights they've gained from that campus, which is a real commitment to Christ, probably within a few years being in the higher echelons of government and or business, and really in a very influential position for the cause of Christ. Boy, a beautiful vision that these men put together. This man went in to interview. He was looking at the possibility of becoming involved in this ministry, and one of the questions that went to Glen Eyrie, the Navigator headquarters, and one of the questions that he was asked was, do you think the fact that you're a Southern Baptist would be a problem? And he kind of, you know, that caught him off guard, and he said, what are you talking about? And he said, well, he said, we found as we've initiated this ministry on various campuses, the larger campuses around the country, as we sought to get started, that the BSU has fought us to the nail. Conflict. No cooperation. BSUs are actively engaged in trying to minister to internationals. But boy, this thing of jealousy, this thing of, hey, you know, this is my territory, don't you infringe in what we're already trying to do? That's just not of the Lord. I just don't see that at all. So I think there needs to be a spirit of cooperation. Now, obviously, coming onto a campus, if you're coming in with a new type of organization that's meeting a need that hasn't been met before, certain groups to cooperate with would compromise your objectives. But I think there is room for fellowship, and in some cases there will be room for co-laboring. There have been some campuses where InterVarsity and NAVS and Campus Crusade and maybe even BSU and some other groups have come together for certain ministries on campus for a given week or a given month, certain kinds of emphases, and I think those are extremely positive things. But I think you need to be aware of the fact of that potential conflict. That there will be groups on campus that may not be very excited about you coming on, And that's one reason it's extremely important for you to know that it's God's will for you to be there. This will be very frustrating for you, very disillusioning for you sometimes without that. I think another thing to avoid conflicts is simply to seek at times to work with the leadership that's on campus if there is a strong evangelical voice already on campus. When I was at Winter Park, one of the mistakes I feel like I made was that I began to seek to have a ministry to Rollins College. I don't know how many of you know much about Rollins College, but it is a tough nut to crack evangelically. It's mostly rich Northeastern kids. They have a mini-mester. When I was there, one of the guys in administration told me they have a mini-mester, you know, in January, where they had these special courses that they offer. One of the courses they were going to offer was foreign car mechanics, because they had such a high percentage of foreign sports cars on campus. And they did. You could walk down campus, you'd see Mercedes and Jaguars and Ferrari. It was unbelievable, just the financial picture that those students represented. And it was a very cold campus to the gospel. But I had a desire to try to begin a ministry there. There was already a BCM ministry there, which, by the way, was led by a man that really loved the Lord and was really moving towards discipleship, Stoney Shaw. Some of you know Stoney. And initially, I began to work a little bit with Stoney, but then I kind of tried to do my own thing. And there were some real problems in that. Stoney never took offense at that, but I think he potentially could have, because really, there wasn't an evangelical voice on campus. There was no real need for me to work outside of what Stoney was already doing. And what I think, should have done at that time was to come and offer my services to Stoney and seek to bring about his confidence so that he would allow me to be more involved in some of the things he was seeking to do. There was just no benefit to my coming in seeking to have a church ministry on campus where the BCM was really seeking to do the same thing that I was seeking to do. He was moving in the same direction I was with discipleship and with evangelism. And it was just a divided effort, whereas all of that effort could have been unified and brought together. So I encourage you to consider working within the leadership of what's already existing on campus. And frankly, sometimes the best thing you can do is stay off the campus. If there are organizations on campus that are evangelical, and if for some reason they're not open to you working with them, or you don't want to work with them, I'd encourage you just to encourage them as much as you can. A lot of campuses, you'll find, though, will not have an evangelical voice, especially your smaller campuses. When you get to a campus of 2,000 or less, most of your national groups, parachurch groups, look to the larger campuses. They don't have enough representatives to send to smaller campuses. And VSUs are looking for volunteer directors because they don't have the money to send someone to a small campus. So if you've got a small campus, like a junior college or a small four-year school near you, that is a prime place for an evangelical ministry, even though it may be a Baptist college. A prime place for evangelical voice and ministry. Okay, another problem in a collegiate ministry is contacts. How do I begin to make contacts? If I feel like God has led me onto a campus, I feel like He wants me to have a ministry in some capacity on that campus, how am I going to go about beginning to meet some students on that campus that I can really begin to share my heart with and my vision of what God might want to do on that campus? First thing, obviously, I think from the background that we're from is to seek to contact some of the Baptist students. There are new laws out now that will not allow administrations to publish lists of denominational students without special permission from those students. So that may be hard to find, although if you'll write, if you've got a small school close to you, if you'll write the man who's head of the BCM ministry in your state, and if there's not a BCM work already on that campus, he will send you the names of students, Baptist students, that he knows that are going to that campus and been sent to him by youth ministers from around that state or from other states, knowing that those students were coming to that particular college. You can find some contacts in that way. A lot of times through either Baptist students or other strong Christians you know on campus, they can give you the names of other students on that particular campus. When I came to Florida Southern, I knew one guy that just happened to be a student who was going to the church that I came to, and he was the president for the coming year of the BCM. And I began to talk to him about my vision for what I'd like to see happening in Florida Southern. And he began to get a little bit enthused about the prospects of that. And I said, look, I want us to have a meeting, and I want you to round up as many of the strong Christians on this campus that you know, anybody that you know of, and talk to other strong Christians and ask them to do the same thing. And we had a meeting, I guess, of about 12 or 14 people, most of which were very strong Christians on that campus, many of which were from other denominations, but that was no problem to me. That was not my concern. But we started with the real core, really working through one person. I found one guy that just knew enough about campus, had been on campus long enough, and he had a commitment to the Lord that he knew, basically, who the other key Christians were on that campus. And I was able to pull them together so that we could begin to share with them. Another possibility is, if it's a small campus, you've probably got a chaplain on that campus. If you go to the chaplain, frequently a chaplain on a small campus is overworked to the point that he really can't have a ministry to the students. It's almost absurd to call him a chaplain. All he can afford to do is counsel with problem students sometimes. They'll give him courses to teach. They'll give him a chapel to be in charge of on campus. He'll have a church service Sunday morning in the chapel or whatever. He's so overloaded that he really doesn't have, in most cases, an opportunity for ministry. And frequently, if you'll go into a situation like that and let him know that you're interested maybe in beginning some type of ministry and just encouraging some of the different students on campus, frequently he'll give you some students to contact that he knows are spiritually seeking, that are interested in spiritual things. Another good proposition is students that are within your church. If your church is close to the campus, you're probably going to have some students who go to that campus. And obviously that's a good contact point. Those are people you can work through to find, again, strong Christians, or at least Christian contacts within the campus structure. Then another thing that's probably the least effective, but within the sovereignty of God, it can be a very effective thing, is simply to mingle on campus. Probably won't take you long to find a couple of Christians, if you're willing to mingle long enough, and to begin to find out kind of what's going on campus spiritually, if there's a desire on any of their parts to be involved in any kind of a ministry. But that'll take some time, probably. Simply going to a campus and beginning to walk around, to sit down in the cafeteria, to pop down with folks, going to some of the guys' dorms or girls' dorms, depending on what sex you might be. I wouldn't suggest you go into the other sex of the dorms. That would be a difficult situation, probably. But mingle around. Show up at different types of events where you can begin to meet some of the students, and gradually you'll come into contact with some Christians who can begin to channel you towards some other Christians on campus. Okay. I think a question that comes to my mind is, what are the possibilities of ministry? There are problems in the campus ministry that we've mentioned. We haven't really given solutions to all those problems, but we've talked about some of the realistic problems you will face in trying to initiate a campus ministry, conflicts and other things. But what are some of the possibilities of a campus ministry? One thing is I think there's a tremendous potential with the college age group. Those of you that have worked with college students probably know what I'm talking about. The college age is a very unique age, as I found it. For one thing, college students, by and large, are extremely idealistic. They're very critical. But the reason they're very critical is because they're coming to a point in their life where they're fed up with all the problems and the wrongs that they see in the world, and they want to see some things changed. And they don't have many solutions, but they're very critical. They see the problems, they recognize the problems, and they're quick to talk about them. So one of the things about a college student that's extremely strong in terms of initiating ministry is they're very idealistic. And when you begin to deal with some possible solutions, they're much quicker to respond, I think, than even junior high or high school students most often, because a lot of times they haven't come to a point where they've really thought about the problems of the world. I think another positive thing about working with college students is they're reaching an age that they're really beginning to ask some real basic questions about life. I find that definitely with junior high school students, and for the most part with most high school students, except for older high school students, sometimes, they don't really do much thinking about where their life is going. You know, they live for today. They live for the weekend. They live to get their homework out of the way so they can go do what they want to do. They're not really all that concerned about what's going to happen with their life. They're not all that concerned about the problems around the world or the inconsistencies they see in the lives of people around them. Oftentimes there's so many inconsistencies in their life that they're just not concerned with those kinds of things. But when you find college students getting up around 18, 19, 20, and they're faced with a lot of things in classrooms and other things, they really begin to ask themselves some basic questions. What am I going to do with my life? What really is the purpose to life? Is there any reality in a real God? Is there any God at all? They really begin to ask some basic questions that open them up in a new way, that make them more receptive to talking, at least, about spiritual things, I think, than many other times in their lifetime. I think it's a key time to touch people's lives for the cause of Christ for that reason. Another thing of potential with the college career minister, we found that they, for our situation, are the strongest source of leadership for the younger students, for the high school and junior high school age group. Almost all of the people in our leadership families up to this point have been college career aged people. And they are a tremendous source of leadership and of workers in having a ministry with the younger folks in my church, in my local situation. Tremendous potential for ministry. The last thing is that the likelihood of a college student having a higher degree of influence in society is there simply because of his educational status. Folks that are affected for the cause of Christ in college go ahead and graduate, many of whom probably will go on to graduate school, some will be going to med school, to law school. They begin to get in positions of real influence in their communities, in their society, and there's a long-range benefit that can come from having a dynamic relationship with Jesus Christ as they're beginning their initial years in college. So all those I see as very strong reasons for a strong ministry toward the college career age group. Most of those you've probably already seen or thought through yourselves. Now let me share with you a couple of actual situations, one of which that many of you are familiar with, that is Max Barnett's basic testimony from his campus. And then I want to share with you some experiences that I've had on two or three campus situations. Max Barnett, who is the BCM director at the University of Oklahoma, went to OU, I think about 10 years ago, 10 or 11 years ago. And when Max got there, I suppose he was aware of what the typical BCM ministry had been, or BSU ministry in states outside of Florida had been, and wasn't content with that. I think he'd been around some navigators and some other people who were into discipleship, and he began to realize that that was the direction God was taking him. So he initiated discipleship ministry. The first thing he did, from his own testimony, was he gathered together about 10 or 12 guys. And for that entire year, he simply gave his life to those 10 or 12 young men. He got a tremendous amount of criticism that has not ceased, even to this day. He got a terrific amount of criticism for what he was doing. And I think the perspective was kind of, well, here Max is pouring his life into 10 or 12 Christians, and the whole OU campus is going to hell. You know, what's the BSU for? But Max continued to deal with that criticism and just continued to work with these 12 guys. They'd have Bible study together. They'd take off on the weekends. They'd go to ball games together. They'd spend time together. He'd have them into their home, and they'd go out sharing on campus together. Just did everything together. Built relationships and really had a personal ministry. At the end of that first year, they came back for their next year's school, and Max continued to work with those 10 or 12 guys. But at this point, he challenged those men to begin to work with a small group themselves. And each of them began to do that. They gathered together a small group of people around them and began to work with them. And after about a 3 or 4 year period, that kept happening every year. He kept working with those 12. They kept working with their 6 or 8 or 10 or 12. And they kept working with their 6 or 8 or 10 or 12. I think it was the fourth or fifth year, they had saturated the entire campus with 90 ongoing Bible studies. There was a Bible study in every dorm on campus, many of the fraternities and sororities. A year or two after that, he saw a need on the football team and began to work with just a couple of football players who were willing to move for Bible study. The next year, one or two of them stuck, and he began to work with some more of the freshmen coming in. And at this point, the last word that I got, about half the Oklahoma University football team are Christians, many of whom were in small group Bible studies in the dormitory, led by other football players that have been discipled and ministered to. Just a beautiful ministry that's taking place on that campus because Max had enough of a vision to pour his life into a few people. And of course, this is consistent with everything that most of you have done and consistent with everything you'll hear this week. When I was entering the University of North Carolina as a freshman, I'd had a brief contact with the navigators over the summer. And when I got up to North Carolina, the navigator representative was just arriving. They were just beginning a navigator ministry. I didn't know really much about the navigators. All I knew was that there was a guy in the navigators who took an interest in my life, and nobody had ever done that before as far as my spiritual life. And he began to talk about things like quiet time that I'd never heard of in the 2 years I'd been a Christian. He began to challenge me to memorize scripture, which I thought was was a bore, but everybody else was doing it, so I felt like rather than be left out, I'd do it. And began to take me on to the Army base at Fort Bragg, and we walked through the Special Forces dorms. And I don't know what you know about servicemen, but the Special Forces are real toughy, supposedly, in the Army. But we walked through those dorms, and I walked behind him. And I just kind of hid behind him, you know, and he'd walk into somebody's room and start talking to these guys and get into a spiritual conversation. It just blew my mind. You know, I never thought I'd be found dead doing something like that. I was kind of cool type guy in high school. You know, I didn't do things like that. I would have never thought about sharing my faith. But that sermon changed my life because the guy took an interest in my life and really began to work with me. And I got to my freshman year at college, and they were just beginning a Navigator ministry, and there were six guys that they'd kind of drawn around. I was one of them. They'd heard that I'd been involved in the Navigator ministry, and they passed the word down the line, and the guy contacted me, and we began to meet for Bible study. And then were challenged to initiate Bible studies. And I was working within that ministry for a context of about three and a half years, almost the same structure of what Max did. But the representative drew about six guys around that committed themselves to the ministry. They began to work with them, meet with them for Bible studies, spend special time building relationships. And then gradually began to challenge us to initiate a small group ministry. The one thing that they did at Chapel Hill that was extremely helpful, and we've done this since then in other situations, is we would take a survey. We had one building on campus where all the students, the freshman students, would come in to register. And sometimes it would take 20 minutes and sometimes it would take 5 hours. And they'd come out glossy-eyed, you know, straggling out of the back of the building sometimes. Well, there were about four or five of us. Well, there were all seven of us actually that first year. And we were committed to what was going on. And I didn't know why we were doing this initially, but I soon found out. We had these little survey cards that had been printed up. They had three very simple questions. There was a place for the name, and their campus address. And then there were three questions that we simply read and then checked the response. First question was this. Which of the following is the most important to you? Maybe I better write these up here for you.
This is a little bit.
Okay, and there were four choices we gave it. Success, purpose, happiness, or fulfillment. So we would just ask that question. You know, they'd come out and we'd say, we're taking a survey of the freshman class and we've just got three real quick questions we want to ask you. Can we do that? You know, 99 people out of 100 would say, well, yeah, you know, that's okay. They were just freshmen. They didn't know what was going on. They thought it was just a part of the process of getting out, you know. So they'd come out and we'd just say, okay, can we get your name and where you are on campus? And we'd write that down. And then we'd just ask these questions. We'd say, which of the following is most important to you? And we'd read out the four choices. They'd choose one and we'd check it. And the second question was, what, in your opinion, is a Christian? And we just let them answer as they would. Now, we had a couple of selections that we had down there. Like we would put socialization, believes in God, does good works, an American citizen, you know, just anything that they might come up with. And it was amazing. You know, I remember talking to a Jewish girl one year, and she was very hesitant about answering to begin with, but she finally agreed. And I asked her that question. I said, what, in your opinion, is a Christian? And her answer, I'll never forget this, she said, anybody that's not Jewish. And that was her perspective. A Christian was somebody that wasn't Jewish. So we had another place that just said other, and we would just check that and maybe put something in parentheses if they said something else. Okay? And then the third question was the key, and this was really what we were trying to get to. How would you rate your level of interest in being involved in a very small, informal Bible study with other students? There was one word I left out there. How would you rate your level of interest in being involved in a very small, informal, investigative keyword there? investigative Bible study with other students on campus. And we had a number scheme. 1 to 5. We say 1 being least interested, 5 being most interested. How would you rate your level of interest? And of course, most people would say 3. Every now and then you find a person and say, well, you know, 1, 2, I'm not at all interested. And then every so often you find people that say, well, I'd be very interested in that. I'd be very excited about that. And a few people that say, well, you know, I'm not sure about my time, but I would be interested in it. And that was it. And they'd leave. Now, we would go back. Every year we did this. And out of about 3,000 freshman students that would flow through that thing every year over a period of 2 or 3 days during registration, out of about 3,000, we usually actually interviewed about 25 to 2,600. We only missed about 300 or 400. So we had a stack of survey cards that let us know basically the spiritual interest of just about the entire freshman class on campus. And we would go back through and pull out all the 4s and 5s, those that were most interested. And then we would take those and break those up and distribute those to those of us who were involved in the ministry. And we would go and visit these folks. Remember, we've got their name and their address. We'd go and visit these folks and just drop back by and say, you know, that little survey you took last week as you were finishing registration. I said, oh, yeah, I remember that. I said, you just interested, and you indicated that you might be interested in being involved in a very small several-week Bible study with some other students on campus. And I just came by to share with you that we're going to be starting up something like that and just wanted to see just how interested you are in that.
Did you go see them personally, or did you call them?
No, we went to see them personally. That's important. Very important. I think that eye-to-eye contact is very important. Now, our primary objective in going back to see these folks was not to share the gospel with them, although that sometimes took place. Especially if it turned out that that they weren't interested, or sometimes just in the course of the conversation, you know, we'd find out they were Christians. They talked about maybe a Bible study they were involved in church back home, and say, oh, where'd you go to church back home? And they'd share that, and we'd, you know, just led to questions about the Lord, and they began to talk very freely about the Lord. It was just obvious that they knew him, you know, that they had a relationship. So we'd go back through, and we'd usually take about 10 cards, and out of a group of 10 cards, usually out of the 4 and 5 bunch, we'd usually find about 5 or 6 that were willing. And all we did was ask them to commit themselves to a 4-week Bible study. And the material that we used was the Navigator material, entitled Evangelistic Bible Studies, How to Lead Evangelistic Bible Studies. I think you can buy it for about $2 in most bookstores or order from the Navigator. It's the best material I've ever seen on evangelistic Bible studies. And, of course, a lot of these folks were Christians, but some of them weren't. Some of them were just, you know, interested. They were new on campus. They were just checking out different things, and they were just willing to come. But what this study does is it takes one chapter of John over a period of 4 weeks. The first week is chapter 1. The second week is chapter 3. The third week is chapter 5. And the fourth week is chapter 6. And all it does is present the Jesus of the Scriptures, who Jesus claimed to be. And it shows you how to develop questions around that theme in such a way that it brings people to a logical point of understanding of what Scripture at least has to say about Jesus. And the whole thought process behind that Bible study was that if you took non-Christians and simply confronted them with the Jesus of the Word, that the Word would speak for itself and really pierce their lives. And we saw that happen frequently. But we would simply engage in that Bible study, and we'd ask them to, all they had to do, the only commitment they made, was to be faithful to those 4 weeks. Now, after those 4 weeks, if they didn't want to be involved anymore, that was fine, but we just asked them to be faithful about being there for those 4 weeks because it all tied together. And we asked them to be willing to read the chapter of Scripture that we would be covering before they got there the next week. And that was it. Now, that's about a 5-minute commitment. You would read one chapter in John. And we found that a large number of these folks would respond. And of course, sometimes they wouldn't show up the first week, and we'd have to get back and visit with them and just encourage them to be there and work with them. Sometimes they'd miss the third week, and we'd try to get back by to see them real quick and make sure that they were there the next week and just encourage them and love on them. But try to build relationships over that 4-week period. Try to do different things with them. Found a guy that was interested in basketball. Go play basketball with him. Find a gal that doesn't have a car. You're an upperclassman, or you're somebody from off campus that's got a car. Boy, take them into town shopping. You know, take them to your apartment for a meal. Talk about going kazooie. You know, just building relationships, trying to develop friendships with these folks.
You said you got back with them. All right, how did you do that? Did they sign up when they came in, or was each person, like, you know, you've already contacted your 10 little people in your cars, and the ones that said that they would come, would you be in charge of making sure whoever you talked to was there, and you following them back up?
But I would visit the people that I was going to have in my study.
Okay, so when you had your own individual study, it wasn't like everybody's
right, right. In other words, we would meet in a dorm room. Sometimes if there were two roommates, we'd meet in their rooms because there was no conflict there. And we'd just come in and plop down. And also what we tried to do, if we had like students in Chapel Hill, of course we did, we were all students, and we tried to give people cards of students on their floor or in their dorm because they had that much more contact with them and they'd see them more frequently. So within the first 2 or 3 weeks of school, we had 5 or 6 of these little studies going. Now, out of that group, what took place is a couple of non-Christians were firmly confronted with the gospel of Christ. And a lot of seed was obviously sown. There was no pressure to make any kind of decision. But after the 4-week period, we would go back around and visit with these folks and seek to share Christ specifically. And through the process of the 4 weeks, we sensed that they had never had a personal relationship with Christ. And by that time, hopefully, we built the kind of relationship where we could do that for you, that it was done on a personal and friendship level as opposed to just my talking to you and telling you something I want you to know. But it was more of a friendship level. And we found that this was a tremendous way as well to locate some of the seeking Christians on campus, because those kids coming through that freshman line who were really interested in finding some Christian fellowship, boy, you knew it. You know, those kids would come out and say, hey, how, and we get that last question, you know. We get to number 2. What do you, in your opinion, as a Christian? Oh, it's somebody that loved Jesus, you know. So, hey, this is a live wire. So we'd make that clear on the card, and we'd ask them this question. You're interested in being in a small, informal investigative Bible study? They'd say, yeah, boy, I'm really looking for something like that. So we put a 5, and then we put a couple of stars over here, you know, and maybe even turn over the card and write some comments about that person. Make sure you get back in contact with this guy or this girl. And those became the key people that we really began to disciple on campus after the initial small group. And they would come out of these groups, and then we would begin some basic discipleship types of groups with these stronger Christians. And with some of the folks who met Christ or whatever, we begin to channel in a more basic type of group to get them initiated in the Christian group, in the Christian growth. And even those kids who didn't meet Christ, because we lived in the proximity of where they lived on campus, we had continual contact with them for the rest of the year. We had a chance to drop by and see them every so often and just love on them and share with them and encourage them. But I really feel like this is one of the most effective things I've ever been exposed to in locating students on a campus. At this point, this year we did this for the third time, this third consecutive fall at Florida Southern, which means that next year, if the chaplain allows us to do this again, next year we will survey basically the entire freshman class, or the entire student body, freshmen through seniors that are actually existing on campus. Now, I'll share this with you. On a larger campus, on a public campus, I don't believe that permission was sought to do that. I think that there's so many things going on in a public campus that if you're a sponsored organization on campus, you have pretty much freedom, as long as you're not inhibiting something that's already taken place. Like if we'd have been inside trying to catch them coming in and holding up the registration process, we'd have gotten some flack on that. But since we were out and we didn't even deal with them until they got just outside the building, out the back door, we weren't holding or inhibiting any of the administrative processes, so we never got to fight. Matter of fact, Campus Crusade caught on what we were doing. And eventually it got to the point that they had another group that was just beyond us, so that they were getting surveyed twice, you know, when those kids would come out after a couple of years of our doing it. But it was a tremendous way to contact the stronger Christians who really were serious about being involved in ministry, and a good way as well to begin to build some relationships with some non-Christians who had some type of spiritual interest. By my senior year, we'd grown from a group of 6 guys that didn't know where we were going other than the leadership of the Navigator representative who was there, to a group of, a core group of about 40 or 50 people. I think there were about 30 or 35 guys and about 15 or 20 gals. That's one difference. You'll probably find the Navigator ministry, they have a strong ministry to guys, and they don't emphasize the girls' ministry until the guys' ministry is strong. And we had a core group there. Most of those led their own small group Bible studies. They met for their own Bible study together in small groups, but they also led their own Bible studies. So there were about 40 or 50 involved in the core group, but there were about 200 or so involved in small group Bible studies that were offshoots of their ministry in the dorms. And that was just over a 3 or 4 year process based on contacting these kids as they were coming on campus and then seeking to have a ministry to those who were hungry. Very meaningful experience. The Florida Southern, let me share this briefly. I feel like maybe just sharing from my personal experience is one of the more effective things I can do. I hope this is maybe dealing with some needs that you've thought about. Florida Southern, it's a private college, so I didn't have the freedom just to do this on my own. I did take on the responsibility of being the volunteer BCM director, so I had official status on campus. That was no problem. But there was a chaplain there that I began to talk with and share with, and finally decided that I really felt like God wanted me to seek to work out this survey in some way on that campus. So I prayed about it a good bit before I went to him, and then I finally approached him. I really haven't figured out if this was deceitful to this day, but I really just began by asking him questions. I said, do you really feel like there's some needs on campus for some meaningful spiritual things taking place with some of your kids? And yeah, he was very quick to say, well, yeah, you know, there really are some needs on this campus that aren't being met. And I said, one of my concerns, Florida Southern's a very Greek-oriented campus. 60% of the people are in frats or sororities. I said, I'm really concerned about the fact that these freshmen come on the campus, and before they really have any chance to make any choices as far as alternatives, they're almost absorbed into the Greek system. It's the first thing that they're exposed to. And I said, you know, I think it would be of such a benefit if we could just give them some alternatives, some options before they get to that point. Just following along with what everybody else has done all these years. And he agreed with that. So then I made the suggestion. I said, well, you know, I've got a survey that I'd really like to take to just find some of those freshman students who are interested in Bible study. And then coming back and seeking to engage them in Bible study if they are interested. And he agreed with that. He felt like that was a need. We couldn't think of any time like registration to do it, but as the Lord had set that up, Florida Southern has a particular situation where they have what they call a religious orientation. And they have almost all the freshman students come. This, they're all supposed to come, about half actually come, but they come to this religious orientation in the first week of school, and they're presented with the different religious organizations. All these people stand up and share about what their group does on campus. And we worked out a situation where he actually made a suggestion. He said, well, why don't we do this? Why don't you just hand out those cards during religious orientation and let them fill them out themselves, and then you can take those back up and utilize those. So that's what we did. That's what we've done for the last 3 years. As they come in to the assembly room, we just hand them a card and a pencil. We use some of the kids in the ministry there to do that. And they sit down at their seat. They don't know what's going on. They're still green freshmen. They don't know what's supposed to be going on. They look over this card and they fill out their name and address, and they check what is most significant to them. Sometimes they check two or three things because they can't make a decision between one. And then they check what they think a Christian is, and along with other. We don't say believes in Jesus Christ or trusts in Jesus Christ, but they write that in a lot of times, the stronger Christians, because they realize that everything else is insufficient. And they check their interest in Bible study. And as they go out the door, they drop them in a box that some people are holding. And that's what we've been doing. When I first got, before I came to campus from Winter Park, I was really concerned about the campus because I knew there wasn't an evangelical voice, and I really began to pray that God would raise up some students who would be interested in ministry. I suppose you probably had some similar experiences to this, but every time it seemed like I prayed about it, the number eight just kept coming to my mind, and I couldn't shake it. It wasn't that I was trying to think eight, but it just kept popping up whenever I prayed about Florida Southern. So finally I said, okay, Lord, I'll accept that as being from you, and I'll just pray that you'll raise up eight students that'll be serious. And when I got to campus, I contacted the one Christian I knew, and he contacted the other Christians that he knew, and we got together for a meeting. I simply shared my vision on the campus, what I'd like to see happening through discipleship, and asked them to pray about it and do what they felt like the Lord got them to do. And as it turned out, to make a long story short, there were eight people that stepped out and said, hey, I want to commit myself to that. We began to meet with them in a leadership family type of situation, and one of their commitments to be in leadership family was to lead a small group of freshmen. So we'd take these cards once we'd done the survey work, and we gave them 10 cards, and they would go and visit these particular freshmen, recruit them for small group studies, and that's how we started the ministry there. And it's been very exciting to see that grow. Judy Rock, those of you that are in Titusville, really a sweet, sweet sister. She's at Florida Southern, has been working with us since we've been there. And last year, there was a Catholic girl that came in as a freshman, was not a Christian. She expressed an interest in being in a Bible study. Judy began to spend time with her and make friends with her. And Judy's just got such a loving spirit that just glows for Jesus that this girl just couldn't avoid Jesus. And she came to know Christ and stayed in the Bible study and began to grow and get excited about her relationship with the Lord. And this year, she's leading a small group of freshmen and doing a very good job there. Judy's done a tremendous job discipling.
When you first started doing the groups, like from your leadership family, what did you use the NAS Evangelical Bible Study initially, or did you use like Disciple One?
Okay, no, we didn't, but I wish we had.
You wish you had what?
No, we didn't use the NAB Evangelical Study, but I wish we did. I took a kind of a hard-line approach when I came to campus. My objective the first year or two was to locate the serious Christians on campus. That was my objective, the kids who really wanted to take a stand for the Lord. I wanted to find them first and build a base before we tried to really have a ministry on campus. So what we ended up doing was we not only went to visit these 10 people that they'd been given cards on, but we had commitment sheets that were similar to discipleship families, those kinds of commitments. And automatically, you know, out of like 110 people the first year, only about 30 or 35 were willing to make those kinds of commitments. Now, we found the serious ones, that's for sure. But those other 70 or 80 that I think we could have had a ministry to had we started a little bit slower, and had we simply worked with them for a couple of weeks and built a relationship with them with minimal commitment, and then channeled them into groups that would meet their spiritual needs where they were at, I think we lost some of them as far as really having a ministry to them. And I wish we had started with the Navigate material. The four-week period, and then to read the chapter. Now, sometimes they didn't read the chapter, but if they were there, that was enough for me. Yeah. The Bible, the evangelistic Bible study, all you do is ask questions. You know, you just ask them questions of the text, and they just basically determine who Jesus is according to the text. That's all it does. You don't try to bring them to a point of decision within the Bible study. You just make some things clear through your questions and through their answers about what the text has to say about who Jesus really is. And then after about 4 weeks of exposing them to the Word, coming back and tagging base with them, and after building that relationship with them, you know that you care for them, that you want to be their friend in spite of what their response might be to the Lord.
Do you have any extra training for your students that are reading those evangelistic Bible studies, or like on small group things and stuff like that?
We do use
questions.
Just before I left Winter Park, we put together from a lot of different sources, one being Steve's tape and then other small group dynamics books, a little outline, 10 or 12 page outline that said, what's the title of it? How to lead exciting.
Yeah, I've got it.
Small group dynamics for exciting Bible study or something like that.
You went over that on that summer staff.
Right, right. That's what we take them through. You know, it takes 3 or 4 hours for me to walk them through it, but I do that every year with them, the ones that are going to take on small groups. And that's very good stuff. Steve's take on small group dynamics, Steve Pound's take is extremely good. A lot of that material came from that. And then there's a little Navigator book called Lead Out on small group dynamics. Yeah. It's extremely good. But the evangelistic Bible study book itself deals with a lot of the basic things that they'll need for that first four-week period. Of course, after that, you'll need to break and kind of evaluate and get back together with your small group leaders and find out where these students are and maybe who just needs to be loved on to Christ, who maybe has just met Christ through the sharing after the small groups are over, who's ready to go into some heavier small group type stuff, who needs to go into some basic small group type stuff, and then you come back and work with them on an individual basis, challenge them into these different groups. But, boy, there's a real, real potential for ministry there that we missed, frankly, at Florida Southern. And I'm thinking seriously about turning that around completely next year and starting off with a small group, an evangelistic approach. The kids who are Christians, who maybe don't feel like they're being fed or deeply nourished by that four-week approach, you'll find them out immediately in your small group or even just your conversations with them before the small group starts. And you can actually share with them, hey, John, I want you to be aware of the fact that really what we're doing in these small groups is trying to have a ministry to non-Christians. And there are a couple of non-Christians in our group. And I want you to really be patient about the material we're covering and really see this as an opportunity to minister to these guys. And after we finish with this initial four-week thing, we'll get into some deeper things as far as our own personal growth. But I want you to help me. Really loving on these guys and sharing your insights about Christ during the small group without being preachy or whatever. And really involve them in that ministry, and they become involved in a ministry at that point. Okay? One of the one of the stories that's always had a real impact on me. It was about a navigator that went down to Brazil back about 8 years ago. And he began a ministry to just a couple of guys. It was an evangelistic Bible study, basically kind of what we're talking about. He began to work with just a couple of men that he found there in Brazil. It took him a long time to find enough, and even several that were interested, but he began to work with them. And I believe it was one of the pastors or someone else there came to him and said, "Look, you know, I can't understand why in the world, you know, you're approaching it from this direction. Why are you just working with a couple of guys when what you really need to be doing is having more of a massive outreach and trying to reach more and larger groups of people?" And he said, "You know, it'll take you forever to reach Brazil for Christ if this is the approach you're going to take." And the man's response was very insightful. He said, "Well," he said, "my objective is not to reach Brazil. My objective is to reach South America." And he had the vision that we've been talking about all week of pouring your life into a few people to the point that such quality things are going on in their life that they're at a point that they in turn can continue that ministry. That's what Max Barnett's done. That's what happened at the University of North Carolina while I was there. That's what we're trying to do at Florida Southern, and beginning to see take some root. Okay, just a couple of quick things, and then we'll just open up for any other questions you might have. In terms of a basic strategy, you know, it's funny. What I've done in regards to a strategy in working on the campus has really been to take the reach-out strategy and apply it. One of the beautiful things about the BCM objectives is that the basic BCM objective says that our primary task is to share Christ, to evangelize students on campus, to help them come to know Christ, and to help students grow in their Christian walk. And I know of nothing that I've ever been confronted with that does that more effectively. Another thing that's within the objectives or the purpose of BCM is, and this is kind of ambiguous, but it's great for me, it says BCM or BSU does whatever needs to be done. So, you know, as I came on the Florida Southern, I felt like that what needed to be done was to have an evangelistic ministry of discipleship. And in approaching that strategy and simply seeking to have a strategy for that campus, it's always initiated with prayer. Seeking God's will, seeking to affirm the fact that it is God's will for you to be there, getting a vision. You know, we talk a lot about vision, we talk about a lot about the importance of having a vision, but until God really gives you a burden for a campus and a vision for a campus, when things get tough and people don't seem to be responding to the types of things that you're doing, it's always easy to flake out and quit. Because you're not really, I can't remember who was talking about it down here this morning, but talking about how easy it is to flake out when you're not sure that God's initiated. And I think there's a real need to ask God to give you a vision for the group of students you're working with in terms of a long-term ministry that they can have on that campus. Second thing, obviously, we've already talked about is making contact. We talked about ways that you can make contact with some of the Christian students on campus and then share your vision with them. And let them respond by God's leadership to your vision if they want to be a part of that. Some won't be. Some will have the time. Some will have a commitment. Some won't be willing to pay the price to be involved in the kind of the ministry probably that you're talking about in terms of a leadership position within that ministry. But those who do respond will know exactly where you're headed. And hopefully will have prayed it through to the point that they know that that's where God wants them to be as well. Third thing here, and I'm getting into really some principles out of Master Plan of Evangelism Selection. How do you select, you know, who you're going to use for leadership? Basically, that takes care of itself, I think, as you begin to share your vision. There'll be certain students who will disqualify themselves by virtue of lack of time, by virtue of non-interest. There'll be certain students who will step out and say, "Hey, this is really what I feel like God's calling me to do." There'll be certain students you'll want to go to and challenge, which you feel like have the potential to be involved in a dynamic way on the campus, but you'll need to sit down with them on an eyeball-to-eyeball contact and challenge them as to what they're giving their life to, and when they leave that campus, what they want to leave behind. If they just want to have held a student council office, affected the student legislature, you know, for a year or two, or do they want to have some eternal value they leave behind as they go? Fourth thing, and I share this because I've blown it here in several situations, and that's concentration. Two things that we've all heard over and over again is that you reap what you sow and you reproduce after your own kind. I'm from Florida, and I've never seen an orange tree produce an apple. I never have. And I've never seen someone who's weak in a particular area produce that as a strength in someone else. And the biggest mistake that I've made at Florida Southern to this point, I believe, is that when I first came onto campus, rather than pulling together that group of eight students and just pouring my life into them, for at least the first semester, if not even the first year, is that I began to work with them, but not really pour my life into them. And what happened is I gave them responsibility really before I poured my life into them, to a point that they had caught a grasp of what it meant to really work with someone on their level, because they weren't going to learn that from anybody but me. And the result is that the further and further and further away the ministry has gotten from me, the less and less relational the ministry has become. In other words, if I'd spent time pouring my life into them, their concept of what would be normal for discipleship would be to pour your life into someone. And they'd be doing that in their small groups. But it's the rarity right now in some of our small groups where that's taking place. They're meeting and they're covering their material and they're dealing with some good things. But most of them are not really pouring their lives into that small group of guys or gals that they have. And that's my fault. Because when I first pulled them together, I didn't really pour my life into them. We met. We had our meetings. We covered our material. And we really challenged and encouraged one another. But I really challenge you to concentrate. You know, to find a couple of people that really want to move out and to concentrate. Even if that means that you don't really allow them to spread out and begin their ministry for a semester or maybe even a year. But to concentrate and really pour your life into them. Stay in contact with them. Call them up. Pray with them in the mornings. Have quiet time with them. Have them over to your apartment or over to your home. Do whatever you can to build that relational side and let them know that you love them and care about them. And that, to me, is the weakest thing about the kind of discipleship we're talking about here. Because you really almost have to have experienced that before you do that. And one of the fears that I have about the kinds of conferences like these is people coming together, talking about discipleship, talking about pouring your life into people, going home and setting up a program, and running people through Bible studies, but not pouring your life into people. And that's where the crux of discipleship is. So concentration is a key. And I think only after concentration comes expansion. You can get into evangelistic Bible studies, you can get into globe groups or discipleship families or whatever. But the basic model we've worked after at this point, that I've worked after at Florida Southern, has been a leadership family with the students that are committed. They're working in turn with small groups of their own discipleship families. I go on the campus at least once a week and eat lunch and sit around with some of the students and meet their friends and share and so forth, which basically is my form of touch on a limited basis. And we actually have George Fusion on the campus. And the amazing thing about that is that they asked for that. Once the small groups were begun, they came and they said, hey, we need a time when we can pull everybody together on campus. All these folks are in these little small groups, you know, and we know they're going on, but they don't know the other Christians on campus. They need to come together at least once a week for fellowship. So we began George Fusion, and they were the core. You know, we already had 30 or 40 students of Bible study. They came right in the form of a George Fusion. And that was a beautiful thing. We got this together. Okay. Let me stop there and just ask you if there's any thought or maybe some things that you've done or that you're doing that you feel like would really supplement, you know, or stimulate some things in the minds of other people here, or even questions that you might have at all at this point.
This is something that you shared as far as the potential of college students in using them, your leadership family, to teach younger, you know, junior high or whatever. And I have really been just thinking about that lately. And of course, I know every situation is different, but in the ministries that we've been involved in, most of our leadership has come from college students. And I think there's a real danger in that, because when you leave that ministry, when you leave that church, college students are very transient. And there need to be, you know, I feel like that a leadership family as far as a church needs to be older adults. And I think that's been a real weakness in some of the areas of what we've done.
I agree.
And even what Carrie and I are doing, we only have one couple that are in their 40s that are willing to disciple kids, you know. And the rest of our leaders, quote, are either young marrieds or a couple of singles and that kind of thing. And so I'm just beginning in our ministry to see that as far as the church, we really need to ask God and look toward those median age adults.
I agree with that. I don't think you should depend on the college age group to have that long-term ministry. They won't have a long-term ministry over a number of years. And that is one of the problems, the transiency. But one of the things we're finding in our church is we have about as many career people as we do college people. And I think there is real potential there. Mm-hmm. For one thing, when you begin to give people responsibility, especially within the church, it intensifies their commitment to the local church. And it also stretches them in their growth. You know, the times that we're growing the most is when we're involved in ministry, because it challenges us to be digging in. And I think that is one thing we can do for them, to channel them in areas of ministry. But I definitely agree with you. That is
a weakness. I think you have to look at both sides of it, for the body, the whole body, and yet for that individual's ministry. There's a real balance that needs to be.
I'm in a couple of different situations. One of the colleges that I work on is a four-year Southern Baptist college, and BCM has a different direction that it's headed than the ministry I would have on that campus. Yet I'm working with some of the BCM offices that are really interested in discipleship and stuff like that. So like their in-reach or whatever it is, person, that's the one I'm working with in a discipleship family, and then they'll give like input into the BCM and initiate that. So that's one of the things. And
that's good.
Also, I'm working on a junior college campus, and no dormitories or anything. And that's a tough situation, but I was talking with some people that have like worked on other junior colleges like that, and they suggested trying like some really sharp evangelistic films, publicizing them on campus, you know, and then contacting those people. And in a couple weeks, we'll be trying that for our first time, so I don't know how it's going to turn out. But I've been spending time with some of our college students during a particular time during the day. It's between 10 and 11. And I've found a number of Christians that have that sort of sit around the cafeteria, and they've got their groups of friends that they sit with. And so we're going to be reaching out and contacting those Christians. They'll be contacting their friends. A lot of them are as lost as can be. And then inviting them to the movie, and then probably starting something to follow up those Christians at that time. That's just a little different approach.
That's good. And it might be that on your junior college situation, especially, that you might be able to work out something like this.
I'm going to try to check with the registration. I don't think, I'll have to check in the details, but I think the registration is set up in such a way that they don't report to one particular place. So, but I'm just thinking, you know, in order to pay their bills, they're going to have to go to one place.
Yeah.
So it may be that can be done.
If you can just find out enough about what they do when they come on the campus
right.
That first week, where it is that everybody has to go.
Right.
Because there is some place that they're all going to have to go.
They've
maybe
got
at the same time.
Pay their money someplace.
Yeah.
Then when they come out with it broke. Can I just share a couple things?
Sure.
Campus Crusade has got two fantastic things that you may be able to get on your campus. The BCM can rent it as they come through. It's called Paragon Experience. I don't know if you've ever seen any of these. They just had these in the two universities in Buffalo. And we took our Bible study one night, and the next day I went again. And boy, I mean, it was fantastic. In terms of, they have one called If I Should Die. And it starts out with these a dating relationship, and then they're going down in the car, and the car wrecks. It slides. It's three different slides, multimedia. Boy, I mean, it is excellent. Boy, I mean, and I didn't see that one. Another guy told me. I saw the one, How's Your Love Life? And boy, that is now I don't see how a guy can get up and walk away and not know God from there. But it goes through a suicidal thing about a guy that commits suicide, the actual tape of a guy committing suicide. And then it gives the answer back. Very, very powerful in terms of that. And, you know, you're able to rent these. They're going to be back in the Buffalo area in a year. And one of the things I'm beginning now to head up is in terms of working in the area of other strategic places where we can put this. But this is very open. If you need information, give me your name. I'll send you who to contact. I don't have it with me, but that was one thing that was really exciting as to a tool that, you know, like in Winter Park, like FTU.
It costs about $150, I think it is.
Three showings. You get three showings for $150 in one location. Okay, which is good, you know, for this, because boy, I mean, this is boy up top notch, sharp, really. Have you seen it before? You just heard it?
No, we didn't get a chance to have it. We went back to last year.
Oh, boy, I mean, it is dynamite.
It's called the Paragon Experience.
Paragon Experience, Crusade. They're working on another one now for next year. This is what they did. Mm-hmm. Plus, one of the other things is to find out what some of the philosophies are of other groups like Navigators and Crusade. Crusade is very strong on two of the campuses that I work with. And the thing that I've done is I sat down with both of the leaders, and one of Crusade's philosophies is to work themselves out of a job, to train the local church. So I confronted both of the leaders and said, what are you doing to work yourself out of a job through the local body? And neither one of them had an answer. And it made them begin to think. And I said, listen, I'm here, and I'm going to begin training some people. Any way I can help you, I'm willing to work. We had a, you know, that was one thing. We had a college, a free college dinner, and I invited Campus Crusade, invited InterVarsity to come and share their ministries to allow the college kids to know we're not pushing our church. We want them to find the Lord any way that they can, and just to really show the workability. But if you can confront people like this, because if once you find out what their philosophy is, you know, one guy said, listen, I've never had anybody as smart as you, you know, ask me that. Because basically no one ever knows. And he says, you know, I'm not doing anything. But,
he didn't share that was the philosophy of Crusade during the video.
No, I knew that. I confronted him about that. Right. And because I'd worked a year and I gained some knowledge. And, you know, he just sat there and, you know, he didn't have an answer. And it caused, he said, you know, I'm going to have to get with you. And let's start meeting and you can help me develop some things on how
and this is that thing of cooperation. You know, there's some meaningful ministries on the campus nearby. Let them know that you're available. Plug in some of the things they're doing. Maybe they'll, you know, give you some of the responsibilities that are there. They'd love to have somebody as well equipped as some of you to be involved in some of the things they're doing.
One thing that Bob, I want to pick up on to share in terms of the Bible studies, small groups, becoming knowledge-centered. You and I talked about it some time ago, and talked about it even tonight at dinner. Well, I just can't. I'm working with some kids who are now in high school, who are in junior high. And, you know, you go to them and you start sharing what's happening in your life, and you share about the possibility of their becoming involved in a small group. Well, I've been through all that. I know all of that. And, you know, somehow, you know, we need to evaluate the relational, pour your life side. And that's not done. That's not the instant syndrome that we live with. And I know that the leadership had that, did not have that as an intended purpose, but, you know, those are end results when we tend to want a movement and an explosion in that movement before we've done the root work to do it.
And that's a good point, a motivational thing. And that's what has happened at this point in Florida Southern. You see, in an attempt to have a lot going on quick, that was a lot of my desire, to have a lot going on quick, I sacrificed some of the basic, deeper foundation work. And now, the people who are leading some of these small groups are doing exactly what I did with them, but it's not sufficient. It's not sufficient to have a long-term, ongoing discipleship ministry. And that means that I'm going to have to come back and start from scratch to a certain degree and working in a small group and pouring my life to the point that they understand that's what they need to be doing. And a lot of you probably are not in situations where you're fully in charge of your own ministry yet, but if you ever are in that position, that will be a heavy temptation in your life. And if there's anything else I can tell you tonight, I really encourage you, don't take that route. Take the time to go deeper, even though it may take 2 or 3 years before anything is really visible to other people as far as what's going on. Because in the long term, your impact on that campus is going to be so much deeper and so much richer, and so many more people are going to be affected.
From the invitation that I've given, sitting here, most of the people in here are planning on being on the campus themselves and starting some type of ministry yourself, right? You're on a
I'm involved in...
Well, I'm just saying, I'm ministering meetings of the youth in my church. There is no way that I have got time by myself, you know, that up there and do it. I have a leadership family, and they are adults, by the way, all of them.
Super.
They're young marrieds or in the 40s. And the reason why I'm here is that my heart is really burdened for DSUs across the country, because I know that the average one is doing nothing, hardly, you know? And I praise the Lord for the ones that aren't doing something, you know? But I know the ones where I am, they're just doing nothing. And I've got 90% of the DSUers in my church that are going to church. They're going to my church. And I want to start some type of discipleship program with them so that they can start with their individual doors.
I'd encourage you, if you've got somebody in your leadership family, an adult, that...
I have the Sunday school teacher of that.
They can pick up that kind of a vision and that you can pour yourself into and allow them to take that ministry so that it doesn't become yours. That would be a beautiful beginning.